Welcome to the Body Bag Podcast. I'm your host, Broke Rider Dave, and with me, like always, Chris Thomas.
Dave, that was actually perfect, the way you just said it, but do you think, in honor for what we're doing today, can you just do that intro again, but just do it not as good?
Yeah, I could totally do that.
All right, cool.
Hi, please listen to Body Bag Podcast. I'm your host, Broke Rider Dave, and I think Chris is here. Are you here?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay, yeah, so remakes, that's also been a topic that I have been... Oh, what's good, everybody? I'm Chris. But I've been on Insta and Threads for the last couple of weeks, and yeah. Remakes have been a topic of discussion. What's your worst remake? What's a bad movie that deserves to be remade?
Yeah.
Now, that would have been funny if we could have done a versus battle, both only bad ones,
yeah.
because your whole point is you want to get a high score with these.
Yeah. But,
so it's a remake versus off today.
Yep.
I don't think there was any real stipulations for it. So you chose Town That Dreaded Sundown, a 70s movie.
Yep, that was remade in 2014 when all the remakes were being made.
And mine was a year earlier, the Evil Dead remake.
Yeah.
As per my request, I was going to see if we could do Evil Dead
for
first.
For the sticklers listening, we know we were loose with the term remake, okay?
Although I will say you more than others, because The Town That Dreaded Sundown is technically a sequel. It's considered a meta sequel.
Closer to like a requel.
And Evil Dead, I mean, I thought mine was fine. My choice was fine. But I mean, it's kind of like Evil Dead and then Evil Dead 2, which was Evil Dead 2 was kind of a reimagining of Evil Dead 1.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people just consider it a sequel anyway.
Like a reimagination or like a continuation of the story.
But both of these were, did have the titles of their original things, so.
Exactly.
But I will just say this, you can say I might have been unfair or not. Just going in with Town That Dreaded Sundown, when I found out that it was more of a meta sequel, I did dock it just a couple of points. And then I was like, fuck yeah, Dave doesn't know how much he screwed himself.
I've seen the movie before, so I kind of knew it wasn't like a remake, but it's also a movie that just never gets talked about.
Well, we'll talk about it today, but I would like it to be the second one we talk about. Let's start off with Evil Dead, since I think Evil Dead... I was going to say Evil Dead is... Would you say Evil Dead's definitely more popular than The Town That Dreaded Sundown?
Oh, by a lot, yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've heard of The Town That Dreaded Sundown, but I didn't know if it had like a cult following or anything.
This Evil Dead movie in box office made 97.5 million. Mm-hmm. And The Town That Dreaded Sundown made, it was about 120,000.
Oh, close,
Yeah.
It's a good thing that, I was going to say it sucks that Evil Dead came first, because how are you going to follow that with another subpar remake? All right, so Evil Dead, let's start off with Evil Dead. Why'd I pick Evil Dead? Well, we talked about Evil Dead 1, we talked about Evil Dead 2, and Evil Dead Rise, so I thought... Yeah. And I couldn't think of anything probably off the top of my head at the time, so, I hadn't seen it since 2013 when it came out, so damn it, I feel old.
Right.
And I remember leaving the theater going, that was pretty good. I enjoyed it. That was, in 10 years ago, 11 years ago, so let's see if my tastes have changed since then. Had you seen it before? You've seen it before.
Yeah, I've seen it a couple times.
Okay. Let's go. I think that I can kind of breeze through the synopsis fairly. This one doesn't have as much of a intricate plot as Town That Dreaded Sundown.
No.
And a lot of it's familiar. So starting off, starts off intense, little intro before the intro, a woman getting chased in the woods, and you think, oh, this poor lady, until you find out she's possessed.
Yeah.
And she bites the bullet. Daddy has to burn her alive.
And then you realize, oh, Fetty Alvarez is not playing.
Mm-mm.
He knows what Evil Dead fans want.
Yep. If you know Evil Dead, so we're talking body mutilation.
Yeah.
We're talking extreme violence, and we're talking a severe case of potty mouth. So, now the actual story. Group of friends, tell me if you heard this one, go to a creepy cabin in the woods. But this one actually has, I thought, a pretty original plot, in that they are going because one of their group, named Mia, she wants to kick heroin. And she's been struggling with heroin, so they all thought, all right, well, let's take her to this cabin in the woods. We'll stick with her, when the withdrawals happen. We'll be there for her and help her along through, trying to clean and get clean. So right off the bat, I'll say, Even if these characters turn out to be assholes, that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
That they would do that. But we have five people, I believe.
Yep, it's Mia, her older brother David, his girlfriend Natalie, their friend Olivia, and then Eric.
They all gather. They do a little ceremonial. I'm never going to do heroin again. And then into the creepy cabin they go, which I just wanted to say as a side point, Cabin in the Woods is the only movie I've ever seen that actually has a half-decent looking cabin. This is your typical, this looks like a rundown cabin. If you saw it from the outside, you would be like, I don't know, I don't think we should go in there.
Yeah.
Like, this, you know, if the demons don't get you, you're going to scratch yourself against a nail and get tetanus.
Yeah, like,
So, into the cabin we go, and it does not take long, it doesn't say how much time has passed, I assume it was just a few hours, but Mia is already starting to lose her shit.
Yeah.
This is going to be points deducted from me, because when I was watching, I was like, oh boy, I forgot how kind of annoying she is at the beginning.
Yeah, it's kind of wild, though, that the actress Jane Levy
mm-hmm.
playing this role,
mm-hmm.
like everything she does now is like super, super light.
Oh, like this is like the most intense thing she's...
Yeah, like, she does like sitcoms and like rom-coms and things like that.
That's like seeing I was gonna say that's kind of like this is gonna bug the crap out of me. I was listening to an episode and you had mentioned Lacey Chabert.
Yeah.
What was the movie that we saw her in?
Black Xmas, the remake we both enjoyed.
Which is weird because Lacey Chabert is mostly known for doing like Hallmark romance movies.
Yeah, Hallmark and Mean Girls.
Yeah, so it's cool to just have at least a little bit of edge under your belt.
Yeah.
You know, just to have it in your back pocket for, well, you know, you never know when an opportunity is going to come around.
Yeah, but this is far from a little bit of edge.
Just a tiny bit, but we'll see. Olivia and Eric have to talk to David, and they're like, hey, look, no matter what happens, we can't leave because Mia's done this before. She tried to kick heroin before, and she said screw it.
Yeah, she lasted 8 hours last time.
All right, so, and as you do in any creepy cabin, you look around, and you, of course, you're going to find a hidden cabin, or a hidden basement.
Yeah, which is weird, because this is supposed to be, like, their family cabin.
It's their family cabin, but they have a secret basement that nobody knew about. So, you go into creepy murder basement, you see, and what's right there, the, I don't know how to say the first word, the demonon.
It is the...
Naturum
Demonto. Yeah.
Sorry. Naturum Demonto. And
but also before they find that, like the basement is like littered with mutilated cat bodies hanging up. At that point, I'm leaving.
Yeah, leave.
Like we could find somewhere else to do this, okay?
Yeah, I don't know why
room in the Motel 8.
I will pay for the clinic treatment.
Yeah, at that point.
If it's a clinic, I can't afford the clinic thing, I'll vouch for the clinic.
Yeah.
So you find the Naturum Demonto, you know, the leather-bound book that's made of human flesh.
No, what they find is a book in a plastic bag wrapped in barbed wire. And Eric's dumbass is like, hey, I'm gonna open this up.
Why not?
And he deserves everything that happened to him.
Even though he ends up being the most useful one later,
yeah,
he kind of started this. Everybody's... Everybody's kind of doing their own thing. Mia's out pacing outside in the rain, just getting the shakes and just doing what she can to just maintain.
Yeah.
And Eric's stupid ass, all right, look, the thing, he opens it up. It's covered in what looks like ravings of lunatics. It's demon pages with pentagrams, stuff that looks like blood's inside it.
In the book is people saying, do not read this book. Leave it alone.
But get rid of this book. Do not leave it. Just leave right now. And
scratch over everything for him to read. So what does he do? He stencils it out.
I was like, yeah, not only did he read this thing, he made a concise effort to do that whole thing where you get a piece of paper and then take some pencil lead to see what was last written down. And I don't care like how religious or maybe not religious you are. Like, just don't take the chance.
Yeah.
I mean, like, even if you don't believe in stuff like that, like, you know, I'm a skeptic. But if I saw something like that, I'd be like, okay, like, I'm a skeptic 100%, but, like,
No, I'm done.
I would rather look stupid and be wrong.
Yeah.
And especially knowing what's about to be happening.
Instead of being one of those guys, oh, Helen, that is real, I'm just gonna read this, nothing bad's gonna happen.
They're always the first to go.
Not here.
No, but I'm talking about somebody who has that attitude.
Yeah, usually, yeah.
Now that's great. Now demons are on the loose.
Yeah, and that's when Mia tries to leave. They're like, no. She goes in the bathroom, car keys, jumps out the window, and steals a car.
Doesn't get far.
No, crashes it into a pond.
Yeah, it's a bridge. You know, yeah, there's like a bridge, and then there's like a river or pond or some kind of lake or whatever. And some body of water, she crashes the car into it, starts to leave the car, and the demon that has now been let loose takes possession of her with the famous, the infamous tree scene that they recreated.
Yep.
In which a branches of a tree sexually assault the main character, actress, yeah. Mia. And when I was in the theater, I was sitting here, like, that was my one thought when I was watching the movie. I was like, are they going to attempt to recreate the scene?
Yeah.
But for some reason, I still think the original one was a little more intense.
Yeah.
But I'll get into that for why a little bit later. So now, great. Mia's possessed. Everybody, they get her back to the cabin. And what ensues?
Tell what happens when they're like, oh, you're hallucinating because you're going through withdrawals.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing where it's like, no matter what she would have said, they were going to just think she's going crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's staying there, and she's not happy, and you can see, like, the entities slowly start taking her over. And Nick goes outside, finds a dog that they brought.
Yeah, Grandpa's the dog. David finds the dog, Grandpa.
Mutilated.
Yeah.
Dead. Beaten to death with a hammer.
And he's like, my sister's a terrible person. Why?
My sister's I love that he didn't even think, maybe it wasn't my sister. He just immediately thought, wait a second, my sister's a terrible person. She's a drug addict. I bet she was the one who killed the dog.
Yeah.
Because she's not happy that she has to stay, obviously. But at this point now, the demon's taken over her. Yeah. She is in the shower right now with scalding hot water. Like, not a hot shower, but like boiling hot water. Like, that gives you third degree burns. And you actually see, like, her skin starting to kind of, like,
come off, yeah. Oh, yeah,
that was pretty. I was like, ooh,
yeah.
And you would think, okay, we screw this. We're gonna go to the hospital. We're gonna do the clinic. Nope, can't, because now that we're in full this place is haunted mode. The entity made it so that the road is now flooded. You can't go anywhere.
Can't leave anywhere. Yeah.
So back to the cabin we go, and everyone's like, look, give her a sedative. She gets knocked out. Mia's in the other room. Everyone's like, all right, I don't know what to do. I think at this point, Eric is starting to kind of put it in his mind. I think that I might have fucked up.
Yeah.
He doesn't kind of hesitate. As soon as stuff starts going bad, he starts going, I think I might have screwed us all.
Yeah.
And they're talking about Mia, and a now fully possessed Mia comes back in the room wielding a shotgun.
Yeah.
Clips her brother.
Yeah.
And then everybody, like, grabs her, and then, like, into the basement she goes.
Yeah. But before she goes in the basement, she vomits all over Olivia.
Yeah. Rude. A lot of vomit right into the open face of Olivia. And I believe Olivia...
That serves a purpose, yeah.
What'd you say?
That serves a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, Olivia, was she just a friend, or was she in some way, like, a specialist of some kind? Because she's kind of making the rules, like, as of what they were doing.
I think she's, like, grew up, like, a family friend with David and Mia, mm-hmm. But she's a nurse.
Yeah, so nurse, that's why they're following her lead.
Yeah, but I didn't get, because when David introduced his girlfriend Natalie...
She was the nurse, wasn't she?
He's like, she's a doctor. And when any of these medical situations comes up, that doctor don't do shit.
Nope.
She's
Plus,
the most
I don't think...
doctor ever.
Plus, I think that actual doctors would have probably given the advice of, hey, look, you guys want to get her off heroin? Don't do it out in the middle of the woods. Like, this needs to be done in a clinic.
You know what? She's probably someone who has, like, a PhD in, like, history or something and calls herself doctor.
A doctor in name only.
Yeah. All right. She's a medical doctor.
So, as the night goes on, it's kind of a rinse, lather, repeat of things that happen. People separate. Somebody lets their guard down and gets attacked. First, Eric.
Olivia's going to get more sedatives to knock out Mia, and then since she got vomited on, she's possessed now, so
she cuts
her face and stabs Eric, and then stabs him in the eye with a needle.
But Eric retaliates with a porcelain back of the toilet seat to the head.
Yeah.
He bashes her brains in.
Yeah.
Just in time for Nick to show up, be like, hey, I heard commotion. Like this has been going on for at least a minute or two, and you didn't hear a commotion. This isn't a huge cabin.
No. There's like two rooms and a bathroom.
So now Nick is wounded, or Eric is wounded.
Yeah.
Well, Nick is wounded too. He got in the shoulder.
Yeah. It's David, not Nick.
Oh, David. Oh, Nick is in the next review.
Yeah. So many characters. Yeah.
It's so many characters, and they both came out within a year of each other.
Yeah.
Eric is losing blood now.
And then David's telling Natalie what Eric needs.
Yeah, Natalie kind of was absent for a little bit, and then all of a sudden she said something out of nowhere. I was like, oh, crap, there was another person here.
Yeah. And he's like, get him water and sugar. I was like, he's stabbed in the chest, but all right.
Yeah, get it. And you
get
didn't
sugar water.
No, get a sewing kit. You already messed up by taking the knife out of him, which I believe you're supposed to leave in.
Yeah.
Until once you can again, get to us.
Natalie's not a real doctor.
Natalie's not a real doctor, but she can go fetch sugar and water.
Yeah. But she doesn't even do that right, because as she's doing that, she gets convinced by Mia to go down to the basement.
Who is already at this point has shot her brother's shoulder. Is speaking in tongues.
Yeah.
Like she's speaking in tongues straight up like now, and there's a full-on thunderstorm. Like, you would see this, you're like, this is fucking witchcraft.
And then she attacks Natalie. Natalie tries to escape. She bites Natalie. And I think David pulls Natalie out of the basement.
Yeah, not before she slices her own tongue.
Yeah.
With a stray razor, and then proceeds to have the most unsexy girl-on-girl makeout session.
Yeah.
So now guess who is now infected?
Yeah, and it takes effect, but it slows because Natalie decides she's going to cut her own arm off.
She might not be a good doctor, but she took a arm cutting off like a champ.
Yeah.
I don't know why she decided to slice into her bicep.
I don't know. Like, yeah, cause it was infected like down near her wrist, and she cut it all the way up by the bicep.
I was like, that was an interesting placement. But once she starts, she just doesn't even scream. She just saws her arm off. And she claims she feels much better.
Yeah.
But right before she passes out.
Yeah, I love that part where David's like, Natalie's gonna be okay. We're gonna get out of here. It's gonna be okay. Eric being an asshole.
We are?
Cut her arm off. Nothing's okay. Bro, this is all your fault. Shut the fuck up.
Dude, but dude, at the same time, like, surely they had to hear this hacking going on from inside the other room. Like, what took them so long?
Right, because as that was going on, that was when Eric was telling David, like, hey, this is how I fucked up, and really the only way to get out of this is we gotta kill your sister.
We either gotta burn her, we gotta bury her, or dismember her, because this thing says that it needs 5 souls in order for this some kind of creature to be summoned.
Yeah, the Taker of Souls.
Yes, the Abomination Taker of Souls. We have to kill your sister, but not before Natalie now comes in wielding a nail gun. A nail gun to start shooting them.
Okay.
It's a cabin. You just assume they have tool shit and stuff in there, I guess. In the kitchen.
Yeah. I was like, how is that nail gun even working right now?
I don't know. There's
no air compressor or anything. And I doubt it has power and, like, battery, so.
Evil demon magic?
Yeah. That thing was shooting. Eric got messed up.
He gets nailed up a little bit. So does David.
Yeah.
But just when Natalie was about to throw the hammer down and kill David, Nick shows up. I don't know how he got his hands on the nail gun.
He got the nail gun now, and then he kills her. Yeah.
Now we're down Olivia. We are down Natalie. We have a possessed Mia, and we have and we have two dudes.
Yeah, and they get out, and this is kind of where you see David taking like the Ash arc from the original, where he was kind of like reluctant, kind of a piece of shit, looking out for himself. But over the movie becomes that reluctant hero kind of.
Yeah. So yeah, they're like, okay, yeah, I'm gonna burn this bitch down.
Yeah, and like, I'm gonna do what needs to be done.
I'm gonna burn it down.
And he comes up with a fairly smart plan for his sister.
Yeah. When I was in the theater and I was watching it, I was wondering what he was doing because he's gonna
pouring gas everywhere to burn down the house.
Yeah.
But then his sister's down there singing a lullaby that their mom used to sing to them, and he's like, I can't burn my sister alive.
But what I can do is bury her alive.
Yeah, like, he buries her alive, but comes up with a makeshift, like, defibrillator to try to revive her.
So he's going to go down there, he goes to try to get his sister, gets attacked, but speaking of redemption, Eric, who's been the most useful person, you know, in this whole night, other than, the, you know, since the reading,
being the cause, so you better have a solution, asshole.
He, you know, he basically takes one for the team, gets stabbed rescuing Nick. Nick proceeds with his plan, bounds Mia, and he's like, all right, I'm going to bury her.
Yeah.
And then try to defibrillate her back to life. When I watched that in the theater, I was like, all right, what is he doing? Like, why if he's going to bury her anyway, why not just burn her? And because you're going to risk getting killed. But then I thought, I was like, oh, because if she dies via suffocation, he can bring her back and the demon will be out of your system or whatever. Which it works. And getting buried alive is excellent for the skin because it takes away all of her blemishes, all of her scars.
Right. Yeah.
And one would think probably also her heroin addiction. I'm sure there's a metaphor in there somewhere.
She's reborn.
She is reborn. So time to go. Let's get out of here. Let me go get the car. Let me go get the car keys and get out of here. Nope, not so fast. Because we have Eric. I thought he was dead. Yeah, but his body was still there, just ripe for getting possessed.
I guess being driven out of Mia now into Eric.
Eric. What did he get him with? He got him with a. What did he get Nick with? He attacks Nick essentially.
What, crowbar?
Yeah, he like hit him with that, and Nick gives Mia the keys, tells her to get out of there, pushes her out the door, and then takes the gun from earlier and shoots a nearby gas tank. Luckily, there was a gas canister here.
Yeah, and he's already spread gas everywhere in the house, so.
Yeah, so at least he had already done that. So he shoots the gas, and boom, all goes up. Well, that's good. At least happy ending, right? You know, Mia's free, and at least the Violator won't show up. Or the Abominable Collector of Souls, or whatever his name is. He shows up anyway.
Here's my thing. Is it technically five souls because Mia died and then was revived?
Well, I think the implication is...
Soul, yeah.
Because we at this point we have Olivia, Eric, Natalie, and now...
David
died. So I'm guessing, like, once... If they kill her again, then the actual monster will show up.
Yeah, because now it's in full force, because...
It starts raining blood.
Raining blood, and now it looks just like Mia. And they have an intense fight.
They go limb for limb.
Yeah, Mia cuts off the monster's leg.
With a conveniently found chainsaw.
Yeah, monster pushes the Jeep on her arm. Mia rips her own arm off, and then... Puts the chainsaw in the monster's mouth, kills it. Yeah, now it's all over.
Now it's all over. She, oh, no, it's not, because if you stay till the end credits, you get a nice little 5-second cameo from Ash.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's Evil Dead.
I have a question.
Hmm.
Hey, you're Mia in this situation. How do you explain all this to the cops the next day?
If you're Mia? First off, I imagine you're not going straight to the cops. You would probably go to the hospital since your arm is ripped off.
Yeah.
But when
I
they eventually
have questions.
First off, I would say, what would there be to explain? Because I would just the burned cabin and I guess the skeletons that are in there.
Burned cabin, the four bodies. One body was, chainsawed apart by David.
Yeah, but that one gets, what happened? Which one?
Yeah, like, I think it was Olivia's body. Like, before he burns Natalie's body, but Olivia's he takes the chainsaw to and...
Mm.
Cuts it apart.
There would be some explaining to do.
Yeah.
What would I say? Like, no matter what I say, they'll probably have it on record, like, she's delusional, she's a heroin addict. Like, so no matter what I would say, I would just have that going. I wouldn't say anything. I would just play comatose, and, because they're just going to say it was probably me on some heroin-filled rage thing.
Yeah, at that point, like, her choices are you're spending life in a mental institution. Her life in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because no one's gonna believe a demon possessed me and then possessed everyone else and everyone killed everybody.
I swear, go to the cabin and there's the leather bound book will still be there. It doesn't burn.
Yeah.
Just read from it, you'll see.
Yeah.
And but only bring three of you.
Yeah.
Only three of you, because you don't want to give them five souls. Just bring three of you.
Yeah. And like, I want to say, this kind of leads back to, I think it was Army of the Darkness, that shows that there's three books.
Yes.
So technically this, Evil Dead Rise, Evil Dead,
mm-hmm.
all could take place in like the same universe.
Yeah, and what I did like about it is that I think Evil Dead Rise made this movie better.
Yeah.
Because it also shows the different people. Like you have Ash and his group, you know, the friends out in the woods, blah, blah, blah. You had this one. Which, another group of people out in the woods, but it was, you know, for trying to get the heroine sister off of it. And then you had Evil Dead Rise, where it was an apartment, and it was a mother you know,
family, yeah, and then the irresponsible aunt that kind of had a take shoulder of everything. Yeah, I'd like to see, like, I don't know how what they're going to do with the next movie, but I'd like to see, like, all three of the survivors, like, come together,
like a support, emotional support thing.
No, like something happens where they all end up together, and there's all three books.
And I guess you'd have to you'd definitely have to have an Ash cameo.
Yeah, like, I think Bruce Campbell said he'd be open to playing the part again. So,
well, that's probably his most famous role. I mean, yeah. It's
this and then Burn Notice. What's a great show?
I love Burn Notice. That was the first like thing I ever actually really watched Bruce Campbell in.
I want to say I've seen Evil Dead first, but it wasn't until later on in life I put it together that it was the same person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But initial thoughts. As somebody who has seen Evil Dead 1 and this remake-ish movie, I thought it was okay. I obviously think the first one's better.
Well, I think the characters in the first one were better.
Maybe, but, and I also give a lot of love to the fact that they use practical effects in the when all that stuff was going down, all the demonic stuff. This one, to me, it felt like it just felt like another one of those movies that came out at around that time. The violent remakes.
Yeah, but this was more intense than any of those remakes.
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I didn't like it. Yeah. I'm saying that's what it felt like. But
the one that stands out of all the remakes.
Yes, and I do remember watching this. Like, and I haven't seen it in over 10 years, but there were scenes that stuck with me that I remembered.
Yeah.
I like, when I first saw it, I remembered the tongue scene.
Yeah.
I remembered the raining blood.
God, that's such a cool scene.
Yeah, so that, metal.
That is my favorite scene in the entire franchise.
I just think to myself, that would make an awesome heavy metal cover. And the nails scene, I just remembered a lot of these scenes. Yeah, so that time era, I do remember a lot more than a lot of others.
Yeah.
But do you want to break it down?
Yeah. So for technicals, I think Fede Alvarez did a great job. I enjoyed what he did with this movie, so I gave it an 8.5.
I gave it a 6.8.
6.8, all right.
Yeah, it shot well. It shot competently. I mean, it's obviously intense, but, you know, having seen a lot of movies, you know, around the time, it's intense, it shot well, but a lot of it does feel, it just feels familiar, that's what I'll say, because, you know, the time period, but I'll definitely remember a lot of these scenes, so they have, you know, remember power, but yeah, competent, 6.8, I think that's fine.
Okay, now story, I feel the story is decent, but just the fact that the character had to go so far out of his way to create the events that follow.
Oh, you mean the Eric?
Yeah, so I kind of docked it a point.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave it a 6.7.
Okay, well, you're still more generous than me. I gave it a 6.3. Like I said, this is where I wrote that comment of, it feels like most of the movies that came out around that, where it was just gritty, where they take the original property and then just make it a lot more gritty. Because I would say that this, I would definitely say the kills are definitely way more gritty than, like, the original.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, kind of like what you said, certain things I'm trying to determine when I break these down, does it go to story or enjoyment? So I'll save this comment for enjoyment and just say I gave it a 6.3.
Okay.
The story 6.3.
All right. For enjoyment?
Yeah.
I gave it a 7.3.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could go back and rewatch this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not yearly, but every couple of years, especially if I'm in the mood for an Evil Dead movie.
Mm-hmm.
This might be the one I put on.
Okay, that's cool. As of late, you've been way more generous to my picks than I am, because I gave it a 6. One thing I'll give it, like, and this will be a little bit of a spoiler for what I give Town That Dreaded Sundown. I think that the lead in your movie is way more likable than the leads in mine. Because at the beginning, I just remember thinking, Mia's not necessarily somebody who I was rooting for.
Yeah.
That's
part of the journey. You start off.
I know, and I wrote that. You know, I completely understand. She's recovering from heroin. She's gonna be, you know, like this. But yeah. I just kind of wish I knew what she was like before she acted like that. You know what I mean? Because I think that if we got to see her or clips of her before she started acting annoying, then we would have been like, oh, this is her descent from whatever. But I mean, it's fine. There are a few scenes in this that I remember more than the original.
Yeah.
But I do think a lot of the line delivery from the two main males fell flat, especially David. I think every time David spoke, it sounded awkward, off, or just fell flat.
All right, so you gave it a total score of 19.1, and I gave it a 22.5 for an average score of 20.8.
Thank you, Dave.
That sounds about right. That's right where Evil Dead should be at.
Do you want to read any bad reviews from it?
I can pull those up real quick. I can read a couple.
Because I'm anxious to compare the bad reviews from this one to the bad reviews in Town That Dreaded Sundown.
Okay, right. So Rotten Tomato has the tomato meter for Evil Dead is at 63, the popcorn meter at 64. So it's one of those rare movies where the critics and the viewers agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think our score is might be either right there or a point or two higher.
Yeah. All right, so Richard Propes from IndependentCritic.com. It's likely to get most folks who watch it and are unfamiliar with the original film rushing home to watch Rami's version. Okay. All right. Brian D. Johnson at McLean's Magazine. Watch Evil Dead at your own risk.
Well, maybe, yeah. I mean, you can say that's true. Yeah. It gets very gory. If you don't have I found out in a funny story. Well, I'll tell you later. Yeah, don't go into it if you have a weak stomach.
Yeah. And you got Maddie Lucas from the front row. It's just another bland gore fest that plays like the reheated remains of a far better film that have come before.
I mean, in a way. I mean, like I said, I said that it felt like it definitely felt like one of those reboots.
Yeah.
But I think it's better than a lot that did come out.
Yeah. And then the last one. Much like the Dawn of the Dead remake, at first assumed a travesty, yet surprisingly good. How's this a rotten review? Evil Dead could almost boast the same.
I don't know. I was like, did he move on to the positive reviews? Because that sounded like it was a pretty good review.
Yeah, it says rotten, so.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, okay.
Is that the train?
That is the train.
I thought I heard something faint in the background, but I thought, nah, it couldn't be. And then I heard it again. I was like, that is the train.
It's here.
Sounds like it's right outside your house.
Right?
Anywho.
All right. On to my pick.
The Town That Dreaded Sundown.
Yes.
I will say this because I've never seen it and I knew absolutely nothing going into it. So when I heard The Town That Dreaded Sundowns, I was like, I'm guessing just off the top of my head, it's going to be vampires.
No, it's the requel of the 70s movie that's based on real life murders.
Now the original, was that actually really truly based on actual murders? Or is that just what the story is?
The original is loosely based on the 1946 Texarkana Moonlight Murders.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But, no, it's not vampires. Well, this was your pick. Why don't you get us, like, kicked off with it?
Alright, so this movie starts taking place Halloween night, 2013, in a small Texas town, Texarkana.
Texarkana.
Or it is on the border of Texas and Arkansas, if you couldn't tell by the town name.
I'm ashamed that it took me a while to realize that when I was watching the movie.
Yeah, and in this small town, every Halloween, they play the original, The Town That Dreads Sundown, because it's like the only thing that's ever taken place in this town.
It's become like a morbid. It's kind of like in the Friday the 13th, where I forget which one it was, where some guy went to a diner and then he ordered like the Freddy Fingers and the Jason Voorhees burger. It's like a morbid thing to make money in this town.
Yeah. So there, we meet our lead lady. Her name is Jamie. And like you said, she's more likable, but I feel like the actress really over-leaned into that southern accent.
I guess I didn't notice it, really.
But you meet her. She is in the drive-in with this dude named Corey. He's like the town's football star.
She's like the town shy girl.
Yeah.
It's like Gaston and Belle going on a date.
And it's like, you know, prom king going on the date with, like, the artsy girl in high school.
Yeah.
Not the typical couple, but they leave the drive-in because she's not really into watching this movie.
She doesn't like the violent movies.
Yeah. And they go to Lover's Lane.
Yeah, he's very accommodating. He's like, yeah, I believe.
Yeah, we'll go here to make out. And then they are attacked by a guy wearing the same mask as the original Phantom Killer.
As Jason Voorhees in Friday the 13th Part 2.
Basically that's a mask. It's just a sack with like eyes like kind of cut out, but also like drawn on.
It was like the KKK masks in Django.
Yeah.
If y'all ever seen that. The guy makes him get out of the car and points a gun at him. And Dave, what is it that I texted you last night when I was watching this?
I'm not going to get out of the car with my pants down.
No, I tells Corey to go over there and pull down his pants, and I texted Dave. You know, nothing ever good follows a masked man telling you to pull down your pants.
Yeah.
Like, nothing good ever follows, but he tells Mia to turn around, and he just hacks Corey to death.
Kills Corey, and then doesn't kill Jamie, just kind of attacks her a little bit, and then he gives her a message.
Tell everybody about me.
This is for Mary.
This is for Mary. Mary.
Remember.
So, Jamie's alive.
Yeah. And the cops are like, hey, don't go public with this, okay?
Some dumbass cops, because they also, of course, are like, now, were you doing drugs or something like that? Are you, I'm like, come on, man.
Like, the Phantom Killer would be, like, 80 at this point. Couldn't be him.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know that this is a, you know, it's the town thing. What, you don't think that, like, a pervert or a creep could just recreate his murders? Starting with me?
Yeah, I think they went about it a bad way, but I understand them not wanting to cause panic.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, people probably should have known to be a little bit safer.
Yeah, maybe so that people will be like, hey, look, maybe we, you know, never go out, you know, alone, and everybody stay inside after sundown.
Yeah.
But no, the town...
Thanksgiving, the squirrel and boyfriend are killed by the Phantom while they're doing it.
Yeah, when this happened, I thought, because there was a commercial at one point, I thought that it went to a different movie by accident, because all of a sudden, just completely out of nowhere, you know, that story aside, a guy comes home and hooks up with his girlfriend, and, you know, you get a nice little sex scene for the fellas in a motel. Oh, and, you know, hard sex right in front of a window where the blinds were open. You know, bold choice.
Yeah, and then after he kills him, he makes a little phone call. Jamie. He's like, hey, just murder these people. I'm gonna do it again until you make people remember.
I kill as I please. I will do it as I please. And
that brings in a Texas Ranger. Super random casting, but I'm so happy they did it.
Yes.
Played by Anthony Anderson.
I love a nice Anthony Anderson cameo in anything.
Yeah. Well, this isn't a cameo. He's a main part.
He's a main part, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
A guest star, whatever you want to call it. And I'm glad because he is clearly the most competent cop that they have right now. Finally, after all these movies, a cop that doesn't piss me off.
And from there, there's a vigil for these people where some teenager decides he's going to dress up as Phantom Killer. And the police mow this guy down.
No hesitation.
No hesitation. You're wearing that mask in this town while killings are going on. You're getting shot.
This is like a reverse Halloween Ends, where it's like, oh, if we catch you wearing that thing, we will kill you.
Yeah, this is completely Texas at that point.
Yes, it was. And talking about, you know, going about it the wrong way, word gets to, I guess it's the mayor or the city council, and they announce, hey, guess the killer is fine. The Phantom is finally dead.
Yeah.
And like you don't even want to verify it first? Or
yeah, and then Jamie gets an email, which said it was from the Phantom. Turns out it wasn't. It was from a pastor.
It's like an overly religious pastor who, he was at the movie theater the night that horror movie was playing, and, you know, he was out there. Have you ever had that? Have you ever, like, attended something where, like, there was, like, a person with picket signs saying what you were doing was evil?
I've never attended something like that, but I've walked past protests like that.
I did. I went to go see Hollywood Undead.
Such a funny-odd band.
Yes, I know. You don't have to say that out loud.
I remember listening to them in high school.
And, you know, it was a mosh. We were moshing and everything. And as we were leaving, there was a doom and gloom preacher saying that it was Satan's music. Yeah. And that it was, so I was like, yeah, everybody was pretty much just laughing at the dude and just going back to their car. But yeah, he had a bug up his ass and sent a message to Mia. Or not Mia. I'm getting my names mixed up. To
Jamie.
Jamie, yeah, sorry.
So he gets arrested for that because, obviously, like, the fuck are you doing, dude?
Yeah, why are you terrorizing this poor girl?
And then before you're arrested, there's another killing. Now you have this, like, teenage couple. I don't know if they're a couple, but
I think they were
teenage boys experimenting.
Yeah, they were obviously acquaintances or friends of some sort. They went out to go experiment sexually. Obviously, they is like a first time for them kind of thing. And then the Phantom shows up. You know, this dude hates teen sex more than Jason.
Right.
And this is a real monster because he only attacks people who are trying to rip off a nut. You know what I mean?
And he kills these two teenage boys.
One with a gun and one with a trombone.
Yeah. Basically recreating the trombone scene from the original film.
Not for anybody in particular, because there's no way that the autopsy is going to know that that was a trombone. But, you know, for us, the audience.
Yeah. And then the reverend's arrested, and that leads to the deputy ending his shift, and he goes to a bar. He's pretty upset by this.
Mm-hmm.
Because that reverend is a high, you know, has high standing in the community. And
yeah.
That arrest him. And he's talking to this girl at the bar, takes her home. They start.
She down. Starts.
Yeah, she starts on him going downtown. And while that's happening, the Phantom Killer shows up outside his window and shoots the deputy in the head.
The dude just has a sixth sense. He knew that somebody was getting some head somewhere.
Yeah. And he's like, can't have that.
I can't stand for that. I can't stand people trying to orgasm over in this town.
Yeah. And the woman he was with, she runs. They have a little chase scene. She escapes into a cornfield for a little bit. And then her phone rings, revealing to the killer exactly where she's at.
Because this killer has everyone's number.
Yeah. Then he kills her and hangs her up like a scarecrow.
So we've got a good amount of killing that's going on so far.
Yeah, and while all this is going on, you have Jamie with this guy that she kind of went to high school with, but doesn't really know. She met
Nick.
He works at the archives, and they're trying to figure out the mystery. Who was the original killer?
Yeah, she's got nothing better to do.
To
me, that dude Nick just felt so creepy.
Yeah.
He was like,
she's like, I watched this, I was like 100% sure he was going to be the killer.
I put that in my notes. I said, I swear if this dude ends up being the killer, I'm deducting all the points from this movie.
Yeah, but he's not.
He's not, but he still
go to the son of the director of the original film, and they talk about it, and they find out about this last murder that happened.
That was never, like, given attention.
Yeah, that was never reported because the guy that they kind of put a blame on was already in jail for another crime, doing life, so they didn't have to worry about it. But even though another one happened, they're like, let's just brush this under the rug.
Let's just not talk about it, or just it'll just be unreported.
Yeah, Hank McCready was killed last, and the original director of the film kind of had a theory that after he killed Hank McCready, the killer probably hopped the train to California. Disappeared because no one else dies. And they're like, oh. And they realized that before Hank died, he knocked up his girlfriend named Mary.
Remember me.
Yeah, now it's all connecting. And they're like, oh, so maybe it's Hank McCready's son. Well, his son died a couple years ago. But
oh, damn.
He had a son. And his son's been raised to hate Texarkana because they kind of brushed his grandfather's death under the rug, and he was raised by his grandmother, who was pissed by it.
And they're like, hey, dude, is this all just conjecture, or do you actually have any proof of any of this? And he's like, nah, I just know.
Yeah. And the way that Nick was like, we can't listen to this guy, he is nuts. I'm like, you're
Come
the
on, dude.
Grandson. But he is not. Because then Mary gets like an acceptance letter to program in California, and she's like, her grandma's like, we're leaving, we're out,
we're gonna get out of here because I'm not gonna let this thing just be your life now, this whole murder serial killer thing. So they're planning on leaving before sunup, but not before Jamie gets a little strange.
Yes, her and Nick do it, and then Nick leaves and he is killed.
He does not make it home. Which, you know what, at this point, if you're walking home alone in the dark, given all of this stuff, you kind of deserve it.
Yeah. You know what's been happening in this town.
What, you couldn't just stay over at her place, like, until she leaves?
Right. And then her and her grandmother leave. They stop at a gas station, and her grandmother's killed.
And so are two other random civilians, the gas station attendant and a guy filling up gas.
Yeah. And on starts the chase between Jamie and the Phantom Killer,
who now is chasing her with the intent to kill.
Yeah.
He's like, I let you go the first time.
Yeah. And she finds out that there's two of them.
Yeah, she gets shot by two arrows.
Yeah.
Out in the middle of a field while getting chased. And then she looks over to one side, she sees Bagface. She looks over to the left, Bagface. So there are two serial killers.
Yeah, so it is revealed that the deputy that was posted in front of her house for protection the entire time is McCready's grandson, and he's killer. But also with them is Corey.
Why would Corey be doing this? The guy from the beginning who was supposed to be dead.
Because he didn't want to do his football scholarship and be a football guy, so he decided to start killing people.
That was so lame.
And I love at the end of the movie when she has her little like monologue.
Mm-hmm.
Basically says that that's stupid. She's like, there is no link between the two but the darkness in their souls. Okay. Just say that the writers wanted two killers in this movie, but weren't invested enough to write an actual link between the two.
Just say that the director watched Scream, and yeah. and he wanted to do his own kind of thing with another property and make it Scream.
Yeah. And then Deputy Foster, who was one fan of Killer, kills Corey.
Because Corey was caught monologuing.
Yeah.
Saying, yeah, oh.
Have any monologues here. This is his thing. He just used them. And then
he starts monologuing.
Yeah, and then Jamie finds the gun, shoots Foster. He falls into a river and his body's never found.
So he might still be out there. Who knows? You'll have to wait for the sequel. That'll never come.
Yeah. There's going to be another requel in about 10 years from now.
But yeah, so the two killers, I guess they're just going to have to take her word for it. The reason why she killed a deputy and a guy who everybody thought was, which is weird because they all mourned him and they all buried him. I don't know what they buried. Oh, no, they said they buried a corpse or something like that. But
yeah, a drifter, and they took his teeth out.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, but he looks nothing like me.
and, sure. Yeah, we'll go with it.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's the... I'll get into that, but yeah, that's the town that dreaded sundown.
Yeah, and honestly, I've bashed this movie a lot. It sounds like I didn't like this movie. I enjoyed this movie.
Okay.
Right when I finished watching it last night, I put on the original as I was going to sleep. It's on Tubi, so it's completely free.
I will say that I liked the camera work in this movie more than I liked the camera work in the Evil Dead remake.
Really?
There were a lot of creative shots that they did. Like, my favorite shot of the movie is the very, very, very beginning scene where it's all one shot. You see a scene of the horror movie, yeah. And it backs up. You see it's a TV, or it's a movie screen. It goes up, over, into the audience where we see the main characters. Then they go and leave, and it still continues to pan through the audience, and you see characters, and as they leave, it goes up. I was like, oh, this is one shot. This is awesome.
See, I like the camera work too, but I enjoyed what Fede Alvarez did better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I gave this one on technicals a 7.5.
Okay. I gave it a 6.5 because as much as I like the camera work, the editing gets choppy. The editing gets choppy in a lot of places, especially when there's chase scenes. I remember sitting there, I think it was in like 5 seconds, there was like 10 cuts while she was running and wonder. I was like, oh my god, keep it still. The cameras are best when you're kind of still.
Yeah.
But it's competent, and I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. And now the story. Like, I like the characters, and I genuinely like the story, but mm-hmm. I just felt at parts they were lazy.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah, I gave it a 6.5.
I must be the stickler. I give it a 4.9. As a slasher, you get your kills.
Yeah.
And it is a fun killer. Like, I mean, it's Bagface Jason.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so on that, you do get creative deaths, which is, you know, when you're watching a slasher, that's why I used to, you know, watch them. I like to see some creative kills.
Yeah.
But these townfolk came off as, like, utterly stupid to me. Like, the way they went about this whole thing. Was there a reason that the preacher ever gave? Why did he send that letter?
He was using what was happening to get people more in line with God.
Oh, but why was he emailing her if he was trying to do that?
You know, it was known that the killers contacted her. That was out in the public now, so.
Yeah, I will say I was a little disappointed because we saw Anthony Anderson come in and he's presented like he's going to be the guy who's going to blow this case wide open.
Yeah.
Because he's taking all of the necessary things you're supposed to do. But we never hear from him again.
Yeah, he's a pretty confident cop, yeah.
he's a competent cop, but then after he does that with the Reverend, you don't see him again.
No, yeah. I feel like he probably had more scenes that were probably just cut in production, yeah.
And I did have to give it...
scenes missing, yeah.
And I did dock it because, it is a technically sequel, but I think you would follow it better if you did see the original.
Yeah.
Because I'll say that's what Evil Dead did a little better. You didn't necessarily have to see the original to just kind of watch it.
You definitely should watch the original first.
Yeah.
And I think if you watch the original, you might like this a little bit more.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's why I said story 4-9.
Yeah. So enjoyment, like I said, I enjoy this movie. It's good. I'll probably come back, watch it every couple of years. But it's like nothing special. It's running a little slasher, so I give it a 6.
I was going to say, well, that's why we have the enjoyment thing, is because that's all subjective.
Yeah.
For me, I gave it a 5 in enjoyment. Okay. I probably won't be seeking it out, although I will say, at the very least, I enjoyed the cameos from the actors who I recognized. The guy who was getting head and then got his brains blown out. I don't know his name, but I see him in everything.
Yeah.
I would like seeing Anthony Anderson, and I really did like the actress.
Yeah.
I thought she was very, very sweet.
Yeah.
But I don't foresee myself going out of my way to watch it again.
And that is the Town of Dread Sundown. Let me pull up the Rotten Tomatoes. So on the tomato meter, got a 66, and the popcorn meter got a 40.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said it got, wait, say that one more time?
The tomato meter got a 66%, and then on the popcorn meter got a 40.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So Joe Lipsett from Bloody Disgusting. My larger overall problem with the Town That Dreads Sundown, it makes the capital mistake of thinking that graphic violence and visual panache is enough to keep its audience entertained. Okay. All right. And then John Blisdale from Sinview. So much obvious thought has gone into making the film visually striking that the script seems to have gone unread. There's no other explanation for the woeful stupidity of some of the characters' action and the blandness of the dialogue.
I can kind of agree with that.
Yeah, the script needed a rewrite or two.
Yeah, so all right, you have a point.
Yeah. Benjamin Lee from The Guardian. It's an odd, somewhat original way of playing with sequel conventions. The plot exists in the reality where the original film also exists, but the outside of knowing winks, this is cookie cutter carnage.
I thought the kills were kind of, there were some creative kills, I thought.
Yeah.
But I think I would have scored it higher if it wasn't for that. I think that, well, what did you think of that twist ending of Corey also being...
If it was a different character that's been like around the entire movie,
mm-hmm.
I think it would have been better.
Because it's like, all right, dude, I know this is supposed to be a big reveal, but, like, we only saw you for, like, 5 minutes in the beginning. Like,
yeah, no one gives a shit about you, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, nobody cares. Nobody cares enough about this that this would be a huge twist. It just made me feel like they saw Scream and was like, I want to have two killers.
Yeah. All right, and the last one. David Jenkins from Little White Lies. Clever enough, but forgets to be exciting.
Yeah, there's enough excitement. I wasn't bored.
No. But I get what you mean. There are some, like, kind of dull parts, but, it was...
Can't just be constant. I mean...
Yeah, constant killing. Yeah, I mean, maybe in those parts where they're, you know, telling the story, make the story a little bit more interesting. I get that. All right. So
time to compare.
This round goes to you.
Does it?
Yeah, Evil Dead had a 20.8. And The Town That Dreads Sundown got 18.2.
You know, I feel like, I think you're just overall, in general, more generous than I am when it comes to rating.
Maybe I'm in a good mood, yeah.
Maybe, because, I mean, at least, if anything, you know I'm fair, because I still rated mine lower than you were rating it when we were watching it.
Yeah, so I had higher scores on both of them, yeah.
Yeah, so, if anything, I'm fair, I mean, I don't know, just, they can't hit all the time, no. You know. And, you know, in certain instances, I could be full of shit with my opinion.
Yeah.
All but right. It's better than, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. That means you were up 2-1.
Still anybody's game.
Yeah. All right. So we got two left. So, one or two.
Oh, wait, you asking me to say one or two?
Yeah. One?
Yeah.
We're going with 2020s.
2020s. Oh, that was one of mine.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I got mine.
All right.
I haven't seen it. I just know it got pretty decent reviews. I'm going to go with Talk to Me.
Okay. Yeah, I heard that was a really good A24 movie. And I'm going to go with Abigail.
Oh, okay. I've heard good things about that one, too.
Yeah. Also has Melissa Barrera in it, so.
All right, so those are two movies of the 2020s. You know, it seems like we're balancing out this season with classics and newer movies.
Newer stuff, yeah. And that was round 3 of Versus. Thank you guys for listening. Have a good week, everybody.
Peace.